You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Maybe after a cold winter, some gritty, sweaty summers sound pretty good, as long as the power stays on with air conditioners running. But then food gets too expensive or runs out, or maybe you can't get insurance after that next flood, storm, or fire, and you've got no money to rebuild. So it's time. It's time to move the family somewhere cooler with regular rain. It's time to move to New Zealand, to Scandinavia, or to Canada. What if a few million others go the same route? Our next guest, Giles Slade, thinks it will happen. A massive migration driven by climate change and a fallen economy. Millions of Americans, and maybe Latin Americans, will move north. Greg Slade is an award-winning author with his works about consumption and planned obsolescence from his home on the west coast of Canada. He joins us now to talk about his book, American Exodus, Climate Change, and the Coming Flight for Survival. Giles, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Oh, thank you very much.
What prompted you to write this book?
Well, I'm getting a bit older. I'm 60 now, and I have three boys. And I started wondering what their life was going to be like in the coming century, and especially in the next 20 to 30 years. And the more I sort of looked into it, the darker their future sort of looked to me. So I thought I should let people know about it.
Well, you know, as another Canadian, I can say we're always nervous about that American giant next door. Is it possible you're expressing just another Canuck moment of paranoia?
No, I don't think it's knee-jerk anti-Americanism. I think, I lived in the United States for a long time. I lived in Los Angeles, and it seems to me that when I was there in 82, that there was this great influx of Mexicans into the United States. And for a long time, I was sort of perplexed about it. And when I started to look at these issues, I started to realize that that's part of an economic migration, economic and environmental migration, sort of like the Dust Bowl. That's happening in the United States right now. So, I don't think it's just knee-jerk anti-Americanism.
Good. Let's talk about this earlier example of Americans on the move. Talk to us about the Okies and California and the Dust Bowl of the Great Depression back in the 30s.
Right. Well, there was, a massive La Nina during the 30s, like the La Nina that's happening now. But the one, I guess, that's happening now is larger and is going to last longer. And it dehydrated the plains at the time when they were using, you know, power farming for the first time. And so they dug up their soil at the time when they had these really dry, hot winds. And the soil just blew away, wrecked farming for everyone, destroyed the water supply, and I think 2.5 million people left the plains during that decade. And a lot of them went to California.
And how were they received there?
Very, very badly. And I think that's the first lesson. If you're a climate migrant, you're not going to be welcomed. If you're a climate migrant, you're going to be traveling in a lot of company, and you're not going to be welcomed in the place that you go. They're not going to have the infrastructure for you, and they're going to see you as a threat to their economy.
There were even laws banning them from going to certain establishments, and you had to stay in camps, and the police guarded around the camps. It wasn't pleasant at all, and that happened right in America, the home of democracy.
Yeah, and it more or less happens every time that there is a really large disaster like Hurricane Katrina. You know, I don't think it was any mistake at all that FEMA didn't help the victims of Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. I think it's more or less the rule. There's a case of sort of blaming the victim and stigmatizing people for their suffering, which is, it's kind of archetypal and almost biblical, but it's what happens every time. You know, if you were a good person, you wouldn't have been victimized in this way.
And you mentioned Mexico. The population of Mexico has doubled since 1950. Their land hasn't doubled. It's still climbing. Yet every climate model shows Mexico getting unbearably hot and dry. The desert's expanding. What do you see happening with that?
Well, I think a lot more Mexican and Central American migrants will be pouring into the United States, but already, you know, a quarter of the country lives, eats, sleeps, and works in the United States. So there's in excess of 25 million Mexicans. There's about 110 Mexicans in total. It's changed the demographic structure of the United States. It's changed, the linguistic structure in the United States, and I just think that will keep happening.
Are there some states already losing people?
California has had negative migration for the past 10 years, but I think this current year, which is the, I guess, the worst year of drought for California in the last 500 years, you'll see a lot more than the 250 or 500,000 people that have been pouring out of the state. I think areas all through the Southwest where water is becoming, you know, a really the most important resource will start having negative migration.
Have the people like NSA and other U.S. government agencies, have they seen this coming? Are they talking about it?
Yeah, there are climate change study institutes that have prepared reports for the United States. And this climate migration from the United States into Canada is one of the mid-range scenarios. So it's not at either extreme end. So it's something that they've seen as long as, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. And the thing is that there has been no preparation in Canada about it, and we're just beginning to have the discussion here. People are just beginning to talk about the. I think there's a Professor Ticaro at Simon Fraser University who talks about the effects of climate migration on British Columbia.
Well, how do you see the pressures of climate change meshing with worries about an economic collapse? Might they both combine to drive people into outward migration?
Yes, and in fact, there's an economic historian called Sing Si Chu, I think it's Oberlin College in California, who says that this is exactly what always happens. The two go together. There's an economic collapse and an environmental collapse, and people migrate for this reason. And he has, you know, numerous examples like the Anasazi. What I guess will happen is that, you know, as each superstorm sort of hits New York City, I think Superstorm Sandy cost $80 billion, but they will be happening in greater frequency. And after you've spent $80 billion to repair the infrastructure maybe 2, 3, 4 times, you start to consider, wouldn't it be wiser if we just moved? Wouldn't it be cheaper, wiser if we just moved the industry and people to higher ground?
Right, sort of a local climate flight away from the shores of the ocean and from rivers. And we can see people in the UK definitely considering that as they get flooded out in those regions. Now, looking back in history, the Great Migration from Europe to North America, there were companies who advertised and provided the ships and the passage. It was more or less organized. Do you see that happening in this case?
From the United States into Canada?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be, at first, I think it's going to be a very disorganized affair. I think there needs to be an international conversation about how to achieve this kind of migration and how to prepare for it. I don't think that's happened, and I don't think there's the political will for it. So I think certainly people will move on their own, and it will be a huge disorganized mess.
My personal opinion is the rich will move first. They might just buy an extra house with lots of preparation in Canada in case they need it. And then poorer people with very few choices may take to the roads. We could end up with something like Cormac McCarthy's book, The Road. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, exactly. And you know, the scenario you've just outlined is actually what happened. You know, people with better financial resources make their choices earlier and quicker. So before Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, there had been ample warning, and people with access to cars, you know, left New Orleans, you know, the middle class, the upper middle class. So the people who were left in the center of the city were people who didn't have access to cars, couldn't make those kinds of economic choices, and they're the ones who become most desperate and have to make the most desperate choices. And I think that's a very telling kind of example.
Well, Greg Slade, as you know, a lot of Americans are very patriotic. They love the place where they live. It would be heartbreaking to leave your home. It's going to take a lot to make the move to another country, don't you think?
Yeah, except, you know, there's a very strange relationship between Canada and the United States that I found when I used to live there. And, you know, very warmly welcomed in California. I think they felt that, you know, we were just, you know, one of the colonies that was too illiterate to read the invitation to the big party back in 1776, you know, and so it's something that was supposed to happen with manifest destiny and just didn't happen for a lot of historical accidents. So I don't think, you know, Canada is not as foreign to the United States as, say, Mexico is.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We're talking with Giles Slade, author of American Exodus, Climate Change, and the Coming Flight for Survival. I want to talk about this idea of safe places to go. James Lovelock pictured Britain as an island cooled by surrounding seas, and he said that the government there should get started right now building schools and hospitals to serve the millions of climate refugees who will come. But is any preparation possible, and have you heard anything from the Canadian government on this?
Nothing at all from the Canadian government. I think, you know, it's very difficult for the current Canadian government to say that we're going to prepare for climate change and still maintain its status as a petrostate, you know, so there's a kind of irony there. But in Russia, I know for certain that they're preparing the infrastructure of Siberia to accept many tens of thousands of migrants in the coming decades. So this has already happened, I guess, in Asia. We just haven't followed suit.
Well, I think despite the borders, it's quite possible that China will make a colony out of Siberia as people move north out of there. We'll have to see. Nobody knows. But getting back to North America, the infrastructure, things like water, sewage, housing, they're already pretty poorly developed in Canada's north and in Alaska. Look what's happening in Fort McMurray with the tar sands, for example. Is the north ready?
No, I don't think so. But the north is a particularly good place to go, and especially here on the west coast where there are, you know, extremely fertile places like the Stikine Valley that, you know, is compared to, I guess, the African veldt. I think we'll have 30% to 40% more water in the coming century because of the winds sweeping across the Pacific and dumping water on the western side of our mountains. And for that reason, you know, we'll be rich in a way that most of the rest of the world is not. Water will be the new gold.
Years ago, a fellow named Dan Bloom in Taiwan started sending me plans for solar cities. He was inspired by James Lovelock's vision of the last humans making a stand around a tropical Arctic ocean. That's centuries away if it happens. But as Canadians, we know there's very little soil on those rocks up there. It's quite acidic. We'll never replace the great wheat and corn belts. So are we talking about a population crash as well, really?
I think so. I think we're at a moment where, you know, a population scientist, which population scientists describe as the bottleneck. And I think it doesn't have to happen in this way, but there's no political will that has developed to prevent it. So I think it will, in fact, happen. And our population will be, which is artificially sustained by a lot of, you know, a lot of petroleum products, our population will shrink dramatically in you know, the next 50 years.
What kind of reactions are you getting from Canadians about your book and this idea?
Well, I don't know. I think about 30% of Canadians think that I'm insane. And 70% seem to sit back and say, boy, that's really interesting. I'm getting really positive reactions from Americans who I think have changed their minds about climate change and have changed their minds about how climate change has been misrepresented to them and are beginning to experience these extreme weather events that are happening with greater frequency with real foreboding.
I'm thinking about the people in Texas who have gone through like 3 to 6 months of times when it's over 30 degrees and it doesn't cool off much at night, or people in Kansas who can't grow their gardens anymore. Those people are going to come.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to leave the Southwest for sure and very, very shortly. And then they may work their way north in a sort of staged migration. There are a lot of species like songbirds that are now having their winter homes, you know, 300 miles, 300 to 400 miles further north than they did 20 years ago. I think the most common reaction to climate change is migration, and human beings aren't exempt from it at all. That's what I try to show in my book, you know, with these historical examples of the Dust Bowl and Hurricane Katrina and I guess the Mexican crisis, is that, we're already doing it, actually.
And I wonder if this fear of a mass migration, whether it's rational or not, will cause more Canadians to buy guns, for example. There's all kinds of unpredictable social consequences, even from thinking about these ideas in your book, American Exodus. Don't you find just talking about this stirs up all kinds of emotions?
Yeah, and I think, you know, that may be a good thing because we've put our emotional reaction to climate change on the back burner with, smoke has been blown in our eyes over the past 20 to 30 years. But I don't think buying guns is not a solution. You know, you should prepare yourself for and your family for a safe, planned sort of exit to a better place. Cooler climes and higher ground are really what you're looking for, and that's what I'm looking for as I contemplate selling my home in Richmond.
Climate change, you know, many of the people that are listeners to this program, they're pushing local food production for more resilience. What happens when an extra couple of hundred people show up around the campfire or at the kitchen door?
Yeah, well, exactly what you'd imagine would happen. A lot of people go hungry and a lot of people die, and people who possess the resources, you know, are pretty cheap with them when they come to sharing them out with new people who don't have any, I guess, social capital in that locality. When people come to a new region and need help, I guess the politicians and the people of that region are traditionally very parsimonious with their resources and full of resentment towards the new people who are taking their resources. And I think this is exactly what happened with the Okies in California, and it's exactly what happened after Hurricane Katrina, and it's what's happening in the United States with the Mexicans who come out of their dried Sonoran desert and looking for food and jobs in the United States. And I don't think there's going to be a huge welcome for Americans in Canada, but I don't think that, there are 350 million Americans, there are only 35 million Canadians. I don't think we can turn them back at the door.
Well, Giles Slade, help me picture this. What kind of climate shock would really fuel this exodus? Or will it be a million little decisions during years of grinding heat and storms? Well, how do you see it?
I think in different regions there will be different events. I think, maybe two Superstorm Sandys in a season would pretty well empty out the east coast of the United States. I think, a few more years of drought will empty out the Southwest definitively, including California. And riverine flooding, if it continues as it did in Colorado, this past fall, or even Calgary, will convince a lot of people who live near the rivers of the Midwest that it's not a very habitable place anymore. The carrying capacity has been radically reduced, and they'll start looking for, places where the quality of life is better. But there are economic concerns as well. Young people have more debt now than they've ever had at any point in the history of the United States, and a fresh beginning in a better place where there's better quality of life will be very attractive.
All right, so what are you working on now? What's your next project?
Right now I'm working on selling my house, but I do have a book in mind, but I'm just going to hold on to it for a while.
Okay, and is there a website or a Facebook page where people can go to find out more about your book on American Exodus?
Well, the New Society Publishers, my publisher, has a website, and you can go there, or you can go to my my author page, Giles Slade, on Amazon.com.
Okay, the book is American Exodus, Climate Change and the Coming Flight for Survival. It's from New Society Publishers. We've been talking with the author, Giles Slade. Thanks, Giles, even if it is a little bit of bad news about our future.
Thank you so much. It's good of you to have me on.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.